Books of Elsewhere, Chapter 16, page 157. It felt funny walking through the house with a person who hadn't been there at all. Not really. Just a few minutes before. Olive glanced up at the young woman next to her, with her carefully combed brown hair, pearls, and long gauzy skirts. She felt as though a princess in one of her fairy tale books had climbed out and was waiting to be shown around the house, except, of course, that Annabel knew her way around. At every doorway, at every picture and piece of furniture, Annabel paused. "It is so good to move around this house again," she said. "I've missed it so much. My house, my old home." "My house," thought Olive. But she didn't say this out loud. It was so good to have company. She didn't want to start an argument. In front of the painting of the forest path, Annabel stood looking for so long, smiling and not saying anything, that Olive began to get anxious. And then Annabel shook her head, as if she was clearing a thought away. "I'm sure we'll find my necklace," she said. "I can tell that it's nearby." After they had walked around the upstairs, Olive led Annabel toward the first floor, but they never made it. Annabel stopped with a gasp halfway down the stairs. "There," she whispered. "There. I remember that place. That is where I left it." Olive looked back. Annabel was pointing at the painting of the Silver Lake, to the very spot where Olive had first seen the necklace. Olive could feel her heart starting to pound against her ribcage. Part of her wanted to pull out the necklace and offer it to Annabel, but another part of her said no. It was no, very, very loudly. And what had her Horatio told her? That she shouldn't show the necklace to anyone. Besides, she couldn't take the necklace off. What would Annabel do if she realized that her precious lost present was stuck around Olive's neck? "Put on the spectacles, Olive," said Annabel. Olive's hands obeyed, even though Olive's head didn't want to. Annabel took Olive's hand again. Olive noticed the icy cold of Annabel's touch. With Annabel leading the way, they climbed into the picture of the Silvery Lake. Annabel headed toward the water, her tiny pointed boots making sharp prints in the sand. Olive stumbled behind her. The ripples in the lake seemed to get rougher and wilder as they approached. Annabel stopped at the shore, and she glanced up and down the beach where the lake had scattered small red and black stones, and she looked into the water. "I think it is a few feet farther out in the water," she said to Olive without turning. "There is an old rowboat in the reeds over there. Get it." Olive looked where Annabel was pointing. To her surprise, there was a weathered wooden rowboat, half covered with the waving reeds. She hadn't noticed it before. Olive dragged the boat along the shallow water until it stood in front of Annabel. Annabel climbed in first, taking up the oar, and Olive climbed in after her. Annabel began to row. For a delicate-looking woman, she rowed powerfully. "Do you see anything?" asked Olive, peering out into the water. "Not yet," said Annabel. They were quickly beyond the shallows, but Annabel kept rowing. Soon they were 10 feet, 20 feet, 50 feet from the shore. "I can't see the bottom anymore," said Olive nervously. "Do you think the necklace is out this far?" This time Annabel didn't answer. She rowed farther into the center of the lake, and here the water no longer looked silver, but black, and the evening sky above looked cold and distant. "Would you like me to take a turn rowing, offered Olive, trying to keep the tremble out of her voice. "I don't think so," said Annabel. Then, as Olive watched, Annabel hurled the wooden oar far out into the water. The waves were choppy now, and the oar bobbed and flickered in the ridges, moving farther and farther away. "You see, I know where the necklace is," Annabel said softly, giving Olive the tiniest of smiles. "I knew before you let me out of the portrait." "You did?" Olive gulped. "Yes, I've been watching you. You've been in and out of paintings all over this house. Sometimes you've only gotten in the way, like when you took that little boy back out of the forest. But other times you've done just as we wished, like setting the dog loose, letting me out." Annabel leaned closer to Olive, and her voice was low. "And I know something else. I know that you can't take the necklace off now, and that you've put it on. That's how it works. You're going to wear it until you die."
"Until you die?" Olive whispered.
"Not me," Annabel said. "I've already died."
"You."
Annabel stood up, and the boat rocked crazily. The waves plunged and rose, and then Olive saw something she had seen twice before, a thick black shadow pouring across the sky like oil, turning everything beneath it cold and dark. Annabel raised a hand, and between the rowboat and the shore, a path of smooth black stones appeared on the water. Annabel stepped out onto the path, making her way gracefully toward the land. The stones dissolved into the water behind her.
She glanced back at Olive, who was clinging to the side of the boat in a roiling black water. "Goodbye, Olive," she said. "Someone should have told you not to take things that don't belong to you." Speaking of which, Annabelle made a sign in the air. Olive felt a wind as strong as a fist hit her ribcage. It ripped the spectacles from around her neck and carried them through the air and dropped them into Annabelle's waiting hand. And then Annabelle walked to the end of the path onto the shore and into the darkness. A large wave lifted the rickety little boat for a second. The boat hovered there on the crest of the wave, and Olive had the chance to look around at the shining, splashing darkness. And then the boat plunged back down the wave's other side, dragging Olive, and a second later, Olive's stomach with it. She hung on to the slippery wood with both hands. "Help!" she yelled to nobody at all. "Help me!" A flood of cold water splashed over the low sides, leaving Olive drenched. The wind was growing stronger and the waves were getting higher, and Olive was quite sure that she was screaming even though she couldn't hear her own voice. Another wave pummeled the boat's side, and Olive braced herself against the boat's low walls, trying to balance it with her weight. But when the next huge wave crashed into the boat, Olive was tossed out of it like one noodle slipping out of a spoon, landing back in a huge bowl of soup. For a few seconds, everything was black, black, cold, and wet. Olive realized that she was beneath the murky water of the lake, but with the darkness solid as marble on every side, she had no idea which way was up, and even with her eyes wide open, she couldn't see a thing. This was probably for the best. Olive decided that she didn't know just what else might be swimming beneath her in the black water of the lake. Her lungs were already starting to ache, and Olive made her body go limp, hoping that she would float to the surface like a bubble. And sure enough, she felt herself being pulled very slowly in one direction. Olive kicked her legs, paddling wildly, and her lungs threatening to burst. Then she was breaking through the surface, taking in huge gulps of air. The lake was still rocking like an overcrowded trampoline. Olive, struggling to keep her head above the water, was hoisted and dropped by rows of waves. She squinted through the darkness there in the distance, and she could see a small square of light where the picture frame held a lamp-lit view of the stairs. Olive began to paddle toward it, holding her breath whenever the waves crashed over her head. Once or twice she swallowed a mouthful of lake water. It was mucky and oily, tasted like molding leaves. The frigid water was turning her feet numb. She was exhausted. Her arms and shoulders ached. But the little square of light was coming closer. A towering wave smacked her like a swatter landing on a housefly. The force of it pushed her down under the surface, but this time Olive felt her feet touch the rocks at the bottom of the lake. She gave a strong push with both legs, and soon she was paddling and then crawling onto the wet sand of the shore. Olive knelt there for a moment, panting and gasping. She took off at a run for the picture frame. "Somebody!" Olive yelled. "Anybody! Help me!" The shadows in the sky pulsed and thundered above her. Olive could hear the darkness roaring all around, and she could feel it, grasping at her arms and legs and trying to pull her back. Olive glanced down at the shadows sweeping around her body. Was she imagining it, or were her feet changing color? Yes, they looked grayer, different somehow. They were streakier and shinier. They looked like they had been made of paint. And with a rush of nausea, Olive realized that what Horatio had meant about being trapped in a painting for too long. He'd been telling the truth after all. Was this what had happened to Morton and to the neighbors and to the men who had laid the gravestones in the basement? Revelation pummeled Olive like another great black wave. Maybe the cats had been telling the truth the whole time. Maybe it was already too late. Olive clamped her hands around the silver edges of the frame. "Horatio!" she screamed. "Horatio!" "Well, back up if you want me to get in there," a voice snapped. Olive staggered sideways, and a huge orange cat soared through the frame. Horatio glanced up at Olive through the dark, swirling air, and an irritated expression on his face disappeared for a split second. "Are you all right?" he shouted over the storm. "Mostly my feet," Olive looked down. The shiny streaks of paint had climbed past her ankles. Her toes felt numb. "Hang on to my tail! Hurry!" Horatio bounded back through the frame. Olive locked one hand around Horatio's tail, the other around the picture frame. She hoisted herself out of the painting and she shot across the hallway stairs with such force that she hit the opposite banister and rolled all the way down the steps onto the rug at the bottom of the staircase. Olive pulled herself up onto her elbows, examined her legs. Little tickling waves of warmth were zinging down from her knees to the tips of her toes. If she hadn't known any better, Olive would have thought her legs had fallen asleep. Her feet looked like they had always looked, like they were made of bones and skin. She wiggled her toes. So far, so good. Horatio huffed and paced at the step above her. "What did I tell you?" he demanded. "I said, don't lose those spectacles," I said. "If you lose them, you won't be able to get out again." For more than a century, nobody lost those spectacles. But you managed to lose them in just a few weeks and almost get yourself killed because of it. It's astonishing, really. The one thing I told you to do. The most important thing. "But I didn't lose them," shouted Olive, who had finally gotten her breath back. "She took them." "She?" Horatio crouched on the step, staring intently at Olive. "She who?" The doorbell rang. Horatio bolted up the stairs. Olive clambered to her feet, which still felt a bit numb. She pushed the wet strands of hair out of her eyes. Her saturated sweat socks made small squish squish sounds as she walked along the hall to the door. Olive peeked through the keyhole. Mrs. Niven stood on the porch. She wore a spotless apron, a perfectly ironed dress, and a smile that when Olive opened the door looked like might slide off her face and shatter on the stoop. "Good evening, Mrs. Niven," said Olive politely. "Hello, Olive dear." Miss Nivens looked down at the pool of water that was forming around Olive's feet. "Were you swimming?" "I was just taking a shower," said Olive. "In your clothes?" asked Mrs. Nivens, whose voice had gone up a key. "They were dirty too," said Olive. "Oh, I see." Miss Nivens nodded slowly. A few droplets of water from the pool at Olive's feet trailed over the door jamb and plopped onto the porch. "Well, I bought you a plate of chocolate raisin cookies." Miss Nivens went on bravely, holding out a foil-wrapped plate. Olive took the plate in her wet hands. "But don't spoil your dinner now." "Thank you very much, Mrs. Nivens," said Olive. "Oh, you're welcome," said Mrs. Nivens. She gave Olive a long, hard look. "Are you sure you're all right, Olive?" Olive nodded hard, hoping Mrs. Nivens would leave before a talking cat or an escapee from a painting showed up. "It's a funny old house, isn't it?" Miss Nivens murmured. Her eyes left Olive's face, slowly skinning the hallway and trailing up the stairs. "So much history. I haven't been inside in ages, but I can still remember almost every detail." "Uh-huh," said Olive quickly. "Well, I'll call you if I need anything. Thank you again for the cookies." She slammed the door shut before Mrs. Nivens could say another word. Olive peeked through the front window and watched Mrs. Nivens go sideways down the porch stairs, keeping one eye on the house before scuttling down the walk toward her own house. Then Olive locked the door. She didn't want Mrs. Nivens' help. There was something about the way Mrs. Nivens looked at her that made Olive want to tell lies. Olive leaned against the door, keeping her eyes peeled, and absently munched a cookie. If Annabelle was waiting for Olive to drown so that she could get the necklace back, she probably wouldn't have gone far. Olive wondered how one went on about getting rid of a person who had come out of a painting. Annabelle wasn't alive after all. What did people use to destroy paint? Soap, water, turpentine, paint scraper? Olive was brushing a streak of crumbs off her wet clothes when a furry orange cannonball shot down the stairs in two bounds and crashed into Olive's shins. "Now is the time," puffed Horatio, staggering onto his feet. "We need your help. Mrs. McMartin is loose."